I'm speaking today with Lawrence Allen, who is one of the candidates for City Council District D. I'm going to start with a question that I ask everybody, which is, why are you running for this office?
First, let me just say thank you for the opportunity to interview with you. And I appreciate you coming over to the office this morning. My reason for running for this office is I believe that it requires a person with a certain skill set that can work with diverse populations, that can do the things that are necessary for the development of the Third Ward, Montrose, Sunnyside, South Park, Hiram Clark, Missouri City, part of our city. Now, I've been in that area all of my life, 45 years, and I've worked in that area in the schools, in the school system, all of my career life. And I see the need. I have a passion for the people who live in the community, and I believe that my managerial skills from the principalship is what's needed at the city council table. And the partnership between our school systems and our city is needed today in terms of a comprehensive knowledge of what will make our community better.
Okay. Now, as you say, you have been a teacher, assistant principal, and principal. How does that experience prepare you to be on city council?
Well, as you sit on city council, you have to have an understanding of how to work with diverse groups, because you're one of the 15 individuals there, along with the power structure of the city, which is representative in the mayor's office. Then how to present your viewpoints, how to take a look at the budget and have an accurate shot at what could come into your community, and then have long-range planning. If you've been a school principal or teacher, you understand from the very basic level lesson plans week to week, and how to reach the constituents, in this case the students, and what the outcome is going to be, the successful passing of an exam at the end of the school year. That's really the same formula. As you take the historical viewpoint of the district, the current work of the city council person that's there now, all of the things that may need to be continued and forward to the next level, and at the same time projecting out for the person who's coming after you, not just the time that you're there, projecting the growth, projecting the development, projecting the citizenry's needs on into the future. Planning and five-year plans are very common in schools. 3 to 5, and then 10-year plans for school districts and where we want to go. And I think that part of the planning and training of how to create those kinds of documents has given me a leg up on what's necessary in city council.
Now, your mother, Dr. Alma Allen, is a state representative.
Yes.
She was with HISD before that. You know, what have you learned from her experiences in politics and that might help you?
Well, I found that she's true to herself, first and foremost. And everybody goes into a political office with a personality. And the expectation by the voters is that you take our laws to the office. And being true to that means that you have to work with people who have interest in terms of whether it's community development, whether it's various religious organizations or infrastructure companies, whatever you have there, you still bring a degree of personality, but you have an agenda as well that represents the people's desires. And if you can stay true to yourself in that regard, what she's taught me, meaning that morals, right is right. There's no gray between right and wrong. It's right or it's wrong. Okay? And if you can stand on right, you can live beyond your political life.
Okay.
And that's what I've learned from it.
Okay. We're most of the way through the hurricane season this year. What's your assessment of the state of city's hurricane preparedness planning?
Well, right now we haven't had a need for it for this year, but let's go back a little bit and talk about what occurred when Rita gave us such a scare, and we did have a very effective plan in place. It's just that the individuals involved, I don't think they were aware of the plan so they could follow it and for the best results. As the individuals who were exiting from the Galveston area began to come through Houston, I would use a term like panic. We somewhat panicked and we left before our areas were actually asked to leave. And I think that experience has given us the ability now to make prior plans, how much gas we should have in the car. We're training our citizens about these things, and during hurricane season, what kinds of foods we should keep and store in our homes. I think our communities are now looking at where our elders are, how our first responders, who are the first responders, second responders. So we've had an education since that point. Now, until we actually have a Let's Go Day, you know, it's a boom, it's here, let's move. We don't know how people panic. So we're going to have to talk about dealing with the fear factors of an emergency, because I certainly want to get my family out, and sometimes we just abort the process by which we get all of the people out. And I think that that's going to be an ongoing thing, because we improve through the hurricane season as things become more dangerous. And I think we're better now than we were at Rita, but we won't be able to test a new system until the next hurricane comes that frightens us. And if it doesn't work well, we'll improve on it again. It's just an ongoing concept on lanes, roads, highways, new exits, what have you, because we don't know the direction of the next threat. Could come the opposite direction, and we've not geared to go towards Beaumont, but we're ready to use the other exits towards Dallas. And so it's just an ongoing thing that we have to take each time something comes up.
Okay. The city has $45 million budgeted for drainage improvements in fiscal year 2008. Do you think that's enough? And what do you think the city should be doing to mitigate against flooding that it's not currently doing?
Well, if you talk with the developers out there, they certainly will say that we need funds ongoing through except not only the CIP program, the allocation of funds for infrastructure and drainage. We're always working in the area that we live in. We certainly have adequate drainage for just an everyday activity of rain or what have you. But when we have a torrential shower, then we know that there are areas in Houston, because we built Houston like this, inside of the loop infrastructure. We used to think where we are sitting now, right outside of 610 loop, was kind of rural suburbia at one time. So a lot of the areas in this bayou, Chocolate Bayou area, don't have the kind of infrastructure that's necessary for proper drainage. Pipe sizes have been upgraded, but these homes have been here approximately 60 years. And so there's a lot of work just to get the water to the bayou. We still have the ditches in front of the home concept in this area. And then if we go beyond this area out into what we now classify as the suburban life, Missouri City, Pearland, and the infrastructure is being placed in those areas, along with what the state is doing with the development of the 288 area, and as the developers come, they're putting in the proper infrastructure for the releasing of the waters and the pumps and the new design plans for retention ponds and communities. And so there is a lot of knowledge going into the construction phases of the new homes and what that go into our area. We still will have a set of homes and a set of areas that we just can't go in and dig up everything and put these things in place. And so it's going to be an ongoing process as well. But is it better? The answer is yes. It is much better. Is that enough money? I would say no. But you can only operate on what you have. And that means, is it $50 million the next time? That's going to also help. We have to train our citizens not to dump certain things in the drainage and clog it up. And so we have this whole education piece that goes along with it as well. But I think if we look back, it's much better than it's ever been. But it can get better.
Okay. Council recently granted historic district designation to the old 6th Ward, which gives them unique powers to regulate development in that neighborhood. What's your opinion of this, and what's your opinion of the statement Mayor White made afterwards that he did not intend for that to be a blueprint for other neighborhoods?
Well, I think we look at those homes and the business area of those 6th Wards, it looks like a very historical district, the type of homes that were built in that area. That was long before we decided to have just what we call low-income or moderate housing. And so I think the intent here is to build in that area where the aesthetics of the area is not changed. And I think all of our communities function like that. When developers come in or new residents come in, we want you to build to standard of the community itself. And I don't see that as being something that should be a disappointment to anybody, that if I'm living in the Sunnyside area and you're going to build in the Sunnyside area, we'd like for you to build at least to the standard and not take away from the aesthetics of the community when you build. It just so happens that the Fourth Ward area has a much more historical preservation kind of mentality in terms of how that community looks, and they don't have a desire to change that look. Now, historically, is that good? Probably so. We need to maintain some history. We need to understand from where we come. But at the same time, when you come with the new things, we want it to match, and for lack of a poor terminology. And we want to have a density population where children can still play and move and go to the parks and do other things in that community. And it's much, much needed because it's a very dense area as well. You not only can go up, can't go out. Out here, we can continue to go out, but over there, they have to go up.
All right. Michael Bromwich, the former U.S. Justice Department Inspector General who investigated the problems with the HBD crime lab, recently testified before a State House committee that a special master should be appointed to determine what role faulty evidence analysis played in hundreds of convictions. Mayor White, Chief Hurt, and D.A. Chuck Rosenthal think a special master is not necessary. And there was just an article in Sunday's Chronicle about some issues that people are having, people involved, where, aren't necessarily being represented actively by lawyers on this. What do you think a special master is necessary, and what else do you think should be done with these cases?
Well, in a situation like that, I would need to see the evidence of the study by the chief to determine. We have to start with our initial leadership, else we don't need the leadership if we can't look at why they are saying what they say. If the recommendation has come down that this would be something advantageous to the development of the lab, or if it's going to be something advantageous to really get to the root of the problems in the lab, then we have to weigh all that evidence. But certainly I don't think Chief Hurt would say that without something substantial behind it that he would like to present to those who would be in voting power, to those who have an interest in what's going on, to give balance. So it's not just the fact of him saying no and them saying yes. I don't have privy right now to the information that supports those two positions. And so it would be probably immature of me to give a response when I don't have that information. Certainly it seems easy to just say, oh, bring someone in, but I'm pretty sure I'd have to listen to the other side of that. And then if I had that information, I could better tell you what position I would take.
Okay. Council is currently working on an ordinance that would require developers to either set aside a certain amount of park space when building single-family, multifamily, or mixed-use developments, or alternately to pay a fee that would be used by the city to acquire land for park space. What's your opinion of this proposal?
I agree with this in terms of how we develop our communities, and we notice now that children are playing in the street, and we have to have, I'm not so big on the fee, I'm big on the development of the community itself. As we develop communities, we should have park space. And not only for our residents, but for our animals as well. As we notice, that's a big thing that the citizens are engaged in, which are dog parks and what have you. I think that's all a part of a good community and just good living, that we plan like that. And so if we're going to build a community, we should build it with in mind of how to maintain and to enjoy family life with our children as well as our pets.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Metro will be making a final decision on the route for the university's rail line this fall. Where would you like to see that line go, and what's your opinion of the process they followed in making that determination?
Well, that process started long before today's conversation, and people have had a chance to voice their opinions about various plans, various routes, and now we're in a major battle in District D on whether it should go down Spur 5 or should it go down MLK. And at the same time, there's eminent domain concerns in terms of what those homes that actually butt up against the Martin Luther King Boulevard should be, lose those homes to growth and development of the city. I think in the long range plan for Houston, we want our children to have a better city to live in than we currently live in. And it's going to require some inconveniences on some of our citizens, even me, even be myself, as we look down the long-range plan. So I'm not one to say personally whether it should be on this area or the other area. I'm not 100% sure about that. I just know that it's needed. The rail itself is needed. and that we need to advance because we are losing major contracts because of the way we operate in our city. We can't get around without a car, and many people coming into the Houston area are not familiar with the commutes that we commute in. I mean, we actually have to drive, have to have two cars. We call them horses in Texas. You have to have a horse to get around Texas, and that, if you can imagine a person having an opportunity to have a rail system and not have a vehicle and actually can move around, and you can have a better home, you can have a better family life, maybe more dollars in your pocket to do other activities, the vacation, what have you, if you didn't have this $800 car note, $400 insurance, $500 in gas every month. That's a nice little piece of change that you could enjoy life with your family. And so the rail is a good thing, and it really should accomplish more than just that area that is going in now as we look forward. That if we can reduce the household expenditures by having a rail line that accommodates the needs of the citizens, we just can't stop that. Now, whether it's on 5 or MLK, I'm not sure about that right now.
Do you have an opinion on the Richmond versus 59 part of the line? I think that goes through the Montrose area.
Well, again, it's a matter of inconvenience to somebody. I don't have all of the studies, but I know people have had a chance to voice their opinions. And I think that that's where the real opinion is, those who live there, those who come forward, because it's not coming to city council for a vote. That part is over.
Right.
And so I as a person saying, can you speak to the metro persons or what have you involved, I wouldn't have a side, because I'm for advancement.
Right.
Now, inconvenience, certainly somebody's going to be, somebody's going to be disappointed.
Okay. The city of Houston is supposed to redraw district council lines when the population exceeds 2.1 million. Though there's census data suggests that we've already passed that threshold, Mayor White has said that this task will not be undertaken until after the 2010 census. What's your opinion of this, and what process would you like to see the city follow in redoing council districts?
Well, I guess in the question, it seems like it's going to already be done, so what process should be taken? And I guess we're going to use the same one as always, demographics, the locations of citizens, the numbers, so that each council person represents approximately the same number of individuals in the city, approximately 200,000 people per seat. If we notice there are some very some high areas like the Hiram Plug that are growing leaps and bounds, probably doubling numbers in the area. There's probably going to be some changes there. If we look at the current maps of the city council, they kind of do the snake thing. They're going all over the place. And some areas that seem easily fit in another district, probably need to take a look at all those things. But I think we should look at just using the same demographic formulas and making sure that each representative has an equal number of citizens that they represent.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Council recently voted to abandon a one-block stretch of Bolsover in the Rice Village to a developer who will turn it into a pedestrian plaza as part of a mixed-use project it's working on. The Chronicle called such abandonments poor public policy. What's your opinion of that?
I don't know. It's poor public policy. I've been watching the council this year closely, and I recognize that these things have been in effect for a long time. They just didn't pop up this year. But as we look at every aspect of what we're doing in this city, then we cannot take the mindset that it's going to be this way forever. And we have to work with the developers in building the Houston that we want our grandchildren to have. Certainly we enjoy the one we have, but it won't be adequate for the one that our grandchildren should have. And I think if we keep them in mind in our decision making about the services, the possibility of being close to clinics and other things, then we can appreciate growth and go through the hardship of certain growth. I just believe that we should never stifle the development of our city, as it would then become a much stronger tourist capital. Because if you look at our industries now, we have too many people seemingly out of work. So we have to bring in all kinds of industry, all kinds of opportunity into our city. So I'm just one for growth and development. Now, but yet, going back to the earlier question, that growth and development fits the aesthetic and the aspects of our city, so it's a very beautiful city, easy to navigate in, and those kinds of things. But we should continue to take land that's not being used and use it for something productive.
Okay. Earthlink recently agreed to pay a $5 million penalty to the city for failing to meet deadlines in its contracted construction of a citywide Wi-Fi network. I mean, do you think the original deal that the city made was a good one, and do you think they should still pursue building this network in the event that Earthlink
can't do it? Well, I think the initial idea is a very good one. I think we don't find anybody who would disagree with the idea. And because it was such a forward-thinking idea, there were going to be some areas some problem areas to get it done. Should we abort the idea? The answer is no. Should we continue with the idea? We have to bring in the finest experts that we can to make recommendations. This is the highest principle in management. When you sit at the front of the table for management, don't think that you know everything. Bring in the experts to give you the recommendations of where we need to go next, or should we lengthen our processes? Should we reduce what area we thought we were going to be able to work in? But allow the experts to come forward and give you a recommendation. And I think if we can convene, my position would be with the mayor of the city to convene the panel of experts to review and to give a recommendation on where we should go.
Okay. Mm-hmm. As you know, the city has recently installed cameras at a bunch of intersections to catch people going through red lights. What's your opinion of this program?
Well, I certainly have been conscious of my own turning here lately. I think we talked about the California roll and stop. In Houston, we have a tendency to kind of roll and keep going. I don't know where we'll go to next, but I think the intent is good. I want to go to the intent. Because one car accident, to prevent one car accident is a good thing. Now, if we're using the cameras for people who are running red lights, and I'm pretty sure you're driving in Houston, and if you ever come up on a light that's green for you and somebody comes through that light, it's not, even if you don't hit them, you have to gather your wind. You know, it's just a frightening experience. And so it's not about people running the light. It's about people respecting the law that's already there. And so if you respect the law that's on the books, then the camera has no... is no big deal for you. But if you want to run lights or do things that are in violation of law, you don't endanger yourself only, you endanger other people. And I think that's a deterrent to accidents more than it is just making a slow stop and a turn. And if the cameras can keep us from having that fatal accident, that one or two fatal, if you can see a reduction in fatal accidents, then I think it's a good thing. I think it's the thing that has to be measured on statistical information, which I'm not privy to at this time. But I think it's something somebody can say, here at this corner, in 2005, we experienced this, that, and the other. Now in 2008, is it up? If it's up, then the camera is serving no purpose. If it's down, then we probably can attribute some of the reduction to the fact that people are conscious of the fact that this camera is here. And so those are the kinds of things we make good data-driven decisions about, and not just personal decisions about. Let the data speak for itself.
All right. Lawrence Allen, thank you very much for talking to me, and good luck in November.
All right.